T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
Take it to the finish line. The 13 seed is going to take down a 4 seed. Second upset of the day. Parker Jackson Cartwright, the senior. Remember, at least 5 starters are gone for Arizona. This is it. But it's a Buffalo story in Boise, Idaho. 21-point win. Nate Oates. And the Buffalo Bulls defeat the Arizona Wildcats.
That's it. Alabama will advance, winning by 3. Now they've got a date coming up with Villanova in the round of 32 Saturday.
Middays on the Score.
TNT, TBS, True TV, True TV, wherever it might be, that's what you are hearing. Bernstein and McKnight with you from Real Time Sports in Elk Grove Village. I have knocked down the sausage. I have knocked down the bacon. And you can come out and get your day started, too. I see them already. They've prepared the celery for the Bloody Marys. All the fixins are over there. So they've got your breakfast going with the kitchen hot and plenty of room for you to set up camp. And not Rick Camp, but you can set yourself up and you can have yourself a day of watching all these screens and watching all these games here at Real Time Sports.
It is a perfect place to watch the tournament because every game is completely available to you from wherever you're sitting. But a lot of people might not have that set up at the house, mm-hmm. right? And I think, you know, we were talking a bit yesterday, and you know, before we got to the update here too, about how you watch the tournament and how to consume it, how best to, I don't know if you're a bracket person or if you're just betting every single game like our afternoon show, or if you're, you know, betting every single game like our, I think the tournament itself, you know, we've seen sports be consumed in a lot of different ways over the last few years, whether it's the MLB TV app or whether it's
Twitch.
Yeah, Twitch is a different way to do it. You can, if you want to do a Roku or an Apple TV, all this kind of stuff. The tournament itself, and I have to imagine that in conjunction with CBS and some of the, I would imagine that MLB Advanced Media is involved in some of this too, because they have their tendrils in just about every single app that you've ever downloaded on your phone or your iPad. You can set up a situation where, whether it's through your Apple or Roku or Chromecast or whatever, you have the app, you have every single game that's going on right in front of you, except for the broadcast games. The CBS games are going to be on your actual television, but you can sign in through a different app there. They've set themselves up so you can watch every single game in the tournament without cable. They've set themselves up so that not only can you watch every right. single game of the tournament without cable, but you can have every single game there for you.
Well, everything's going to be over the top at some point, right?
I think so. I absolutely think so. And I just, you know, it got to a situation where, you know, we're watching last night and we dragged the TV out from the other room so, you know, we could just switch from main screen to main screen. But it's the same setup. We're using an Apple
Who's
TV
we?
To do it. You know, the boys and I, you know, we watch the tournament together.
Okay.
Yeah. That's how we do it.
Oh, the guys who are...
yeah, Adam, okay. Adam and Dennis were okay. out there. And at
Did
some
you
point,
invite Z-Pack?
We... Nah, I mean, you got to be careful with that. You just... Small doses of Kevin Z-Pack are the best way to do it.
Okay.
I find. Yeah. For a lot of the different
I just I didn't know what the your running crew
no,
is.
No,
right
I think there. I think Z-Pack will probably be out.
Adam
to,
Harris,
probably about tonight. Adam
Dennis
Harris,
Gambino,
Dennis Gambino,
and then so Z-Pack's like the shemp.
No. He just because okay. you know, of the hours he works. You know, it's kind of okay. it's tough to get Z-Pack on a weeknight. You have
okay,
to kind of you have
enough.
To ration your Z-Pack.
I got
to
be careful.
I'm sure that's
Saturday.
The reason. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Because yeah. he's you're, already sort of just said I'm his what is it cordial workplace acquaintance.
That's how he's dubbed you. Yes.
I am a. I'll take cordial.
Yeah, that's oh, that's a for, good yeah, word yeah, from Z-Pack. Sure,
I'm just
high
saying that,
praise.
And,
really.
And for me, for you know, for what I the image stuff that I tend to battle, just being described internally as cordial, I guess I have to take that as a victory.
You'll take it.
So, but
it,
so your point being what? Your point being that
my point being we're getting closer and closer to the leagues themselves realizing that they can do it themselves, that they don't need these cable companies. They don't have to get, they can get into your home without having you pay the $10.99 for tax on whatever. They don't have to, you don't have to pay the $30 a month for the DVR box or whatever it happens to be. Mm-hmm. We're getting to a point where, and this, you know, it goes into a conversation about how internet needs to be accessed and how it needs to be legislated some in order to help these leagues get it done and help it get into every home in America, not just the homes that can, you know, afford your high-speed 100 megabit or afford your Apple TV. You've got a situation where sports themselves, because they're live programming, right, because they can put those advertisements. And look, I've got a list of the ads that were on each game because I actually watched them this time. You know, the advertisement companies know that they can get in now. It used to be a problem that, you know, if you're streaming video or whatever, how do you know somebody stayed through the 30-second ad off the top of a video as they got into it? And did that matter? Did it get to somebody? Everybody's reaching a point without cable companies that they're finding ways to access each individual viewer with more product, with more games, and keeping them longer.
Well, that's what baseball realized.
Yes.
And that's why Baseball Advanced Media, from the moment it was conceived, was controlling the bloodstream and owning it.
And they have one hurdle left. They have one hurdle left to control all of it, and it's the local blackout situation.
Well,
that... They can get themselves to a place where that's not applicable, and maybe and viewers will pay more to get that situation out of the way, to watch their team in their area from wherever they happen to be.
I think part of it also that they have to overcome, that baseball has to, and maybe it's all sports too, but speaking from somebody who is completely willing to embrace new technology, mm-hmm. but also might have to be walked through some of the actual process of doing it.
Set up.
It's saying, here's what you need to get and here's how it operates. Baseball's problem is the average age of their fan. The average baseball fan is 60 years old at this point. If you're talking, right, people are actually sitting down and watching.
Yeah, and there are only so many millennial kids that can come over and set up their parents' damned internet.
You beat
again.
Me to it. That was exactly what I was going to say. That
I've lived that life.
That how many people where they have to say, look, I want this, I can do this, and there are a lot of older people that would readily take to the technology. It's just that threshold,
yeah,
of getting to the point where the tech is purchased, where it's there. There's a brief tutorial, and then this is the new normal.
You know, I was talking a bit about this with my folks, and just the difference between being willing to press buttons and see what happens, whether it be on an app or on the CBS, you know, sports thing, or whether on the March Madness app or whatever it happens to be, and figure out what happens, versus being worried about pressing menu and then losing it and then not getting it back.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they got told, don't touch it, you'll break it, and then we can't fix it. We got to call the Maytag guy over to fix everything up. You can fix it yourself if you just want to click around and see what happens. There's a gap there, and I think you're right. But this, the March Madness app, the bracket situation, you could scroll left and see the entire bracket, the one that you've put together.
Your bracket, yes.
Your bracket. Yes. You can see the picks, see the scores, see where you got them wrong, scroll back and go to the games, scroll right and go to point. It's the,
you know,
whole
what, though?
Setup.
The bracket is tactile. And that's just me. You're looking at me. I'm sitting here with like a literal newspaper in front of me because I love newsprint. I just that's just me. But to actually write something on a, mm-hmm, bracket. Yeah. My best friend growing up, going back years, he was like a bracket head before it was a thing, before it was ubiquitous and it became
office
this
tools,
right?
And, yeah.
This we're talking back in, you know, like the mid '80s, back to when the last time Loyola was in the tournament winning a game,
yeah,
'85. This, and my friend would take 8.5 by 11 writing paper, you know, lined paper. And he wouldn't wait for the newspaper to arrive the next day. He not only wanted to write his own bracket, he wanted to create and handwrite all of his own literal brackets. That was part of it. That was part of his process, was drawing the lines, making all of it from scratch himself was the whole deal.
There's an experience to it. If you write it down, you're more than likely to remember it. I prep for the show the same way. I like to write stuff into the iPad so that I've done it twice.
Now,
I've thought of it,
it's
and
funny,
then I've written it down.
And people are joking. He literally writes it into, mm-hmm, the iPad. Like, that's your hand scrawl.
I do, yeah.
Scrawl.
I'll show you. I've got the notes
that
right here, and I will actually write it down with the stylus because I've done it twice. I've thought it, and I've written it, and now I'll hopefully remember to bring it up on on the show.
It's, and look, you were a teacher, and you probably did this with your students at some point before, and I remember being, having, they said you can bring in a 3x5 card, like for a physics final. Mm-hmm. You can bring in a 3x5 card with everything written down. You can have these notes.
Yeah.
And the lie is that during the exam, you're going to use anything you've written down, and then you talk to your teachers long after, and they say the whole purpose that was to make you write it down was to do the notes. You know, I was having the conversation years ago during the Stanley Cup final. I was talking to Doc Emmerich.
Okay.
Who's was also a former teacher. And
was he really? I didn't know
I believe
that
so, yeah. Maybe still is. I think Bowling Green, I want to say, he was
cool.
A professor of some kind. I mean, brilliant guy. And I was he has a fastidiously maintained card for games. His
the broadcast card and everything.
Correct.
Set in the right
and any of us who's done play-by-play,
right.
You've done it too. And I know for me, especially for basketball, my preparation, my tiny little handwriting and my four-colored pen and all of that.
Your Jake Arrieta penmanship.
You do, yeah, but I mean, it's not great, but it's always better on something like that. You don't use half of what you write down for any game, but it's your process of having done it, of having written it down, and at least for me, I don't know if that translates the same way with your brackets, where you can visualize it quite the same way, where you can remember exactly what you wrote and how far you've written it. I still think, and this is I can't prove this out of the science behind it, I still think that there's got to be an actual sort of hand-to-brain connection that you get with ink or graphite that you don't get on a keyboard.
I would agree with that wholeheartedly.
Even if it's wrong.
Form the letters. You have to actually think about what you're doing kind of twice. That's what I've always figured about the whole process. And I went back to the newspaper bracket, too. I find it funny that your guy was actually writing things down. I got really excited when you could print the bracket out. Like when we finally got the internet, right?
And you get your printable.
Print it, because I would fill out the bracket in the newspaper, and invariably I would stab the pen through the newspaper, rip up the bracket, and have to go get another damn bracket.
Yep, that happens. This segment brought to you by Dell. Small businesses get tailored tech solutions when they partner with Dell, plus free shipping and a price match guarantee on everything, including laptops with Intel Core processors. Call 877-BUY-DELL. I'm loving the response, by the way, from so many people who remember very specifically that Schaumburg-Eddie Curry championship game.
I have texts from friends who have
really?
My neighbor played in that game and set the pin screen.
Yeah, a friend of mine is just saying, and on Twitter, somebody just actually sent me video of the entire game. I'm sorry, I'm not going to watch an entire high school basketball game right now, but
the play-by-play, I would sit to your card.
The reason we brought it up was because of what Buffalo did to DeAndre Ayton and how they took a guy like that completely out, and it pulled the plug. And that's what it looked like. It looked like they walked over to Arizona's power supply and just pulled the plug, and then everything. All the energy left.
You mentioned, too, you wanted to see him on defense and swatting shots and being an impact presence there. He was to a certain degree, but you're right. At one point, even the defensive impact that guy was able to have went away. And some of that had to do with Buffalo shooting from distance, and, you know, he's kind of an inside guy, but they got emptied out.
And when they started sniping at each other and they start looking at each other and the guys on the bench are yelling at each other, when you're the other team, you're like, yeah.
There it is.
Got him. So Kurt in Austin via Twitter says, close, Bernstein. Doc Emmerich got his PhD at Bowling Green, but he taught at Geneva College in Pittsburgh.
Do we know what he taught?
I'm sure Wikipedia would have that. I mean, I thought it was something other than just like broadcast, like teaching a broadcasting or play-by-play class.
Theoretical physics.
Yeah, but the reason they call him Doc was because he got his PhD, so he is technically a doctor, and just a great interview and an absolute prince of a guy too. Just
met him. You know, my first assignment for the score when I signed on was covering the Blackhawks' first Stanley Cup run in the series of three, and I managed to run into Doc Emmerich once or twice during a game or two with the United Center, and could not have been. I was nothing, still nothing. Could not have been a nicer guy.
You're not still nothing.
Yes.
No, you're Connor McKnight, the new co-host of the Scores Midday Show, which is called Bernstein and McKnight. At 10:40, Eamon Brennan of The Athletic and Fieldhouse will give us some college basketball thoughts. We're going to talk to David Dusek of Golf Week about what's going on at the Arnold Palmer Invitational. That leaderboard is absolutely full of major winners.
Henrik
right now.
Still take off?
Yeah, he's still at 8 under. I've been trying to follow that as best I can. Also, a little bit after 11, some Bears things as the Bears quarterback room is filling out. And what Ryan Pace said yesterday after we got off the air, we went home and listened to that press conference and was interested to hear. Because, you know, Ryan Pace doesn't talk that much. So when he does, I tend to maybe put more emphasis on some of what I hear from him. A couple phrases that he used, a couple of images in my mind about where the Bears are right now. They've yet to play a game. They've yet to, you know, the Hall of Fame game is the first time we actually see them out there against somebody. But there's a different environment right now. There is something going on that's definitely better. I don't know what it means, but it's definitely better. All that and more coming your way. Bernstein and McKnight on the Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
NCAA Tournament Round 1, Day 2 on all of these screens at Real Time Sports in Elk Grove Village. Some people already trickling in, some coffee, some Bloody Marys. They make a hell of a Bloody Mary here. It's all just kind of piled up with stuff. Yeah, I'm sure they'll bring one over if you want one.
I'm a Bloody Mary fan.
I'm sure you are. Quick question. What's with all the dead dogs on airplanes?
I don't understand it.
Apropos of nothing for a second, what is this one? Okay, I always think that it's a reporting issue, a reporting frequency issue, like the summer of the shark, where every summer becomes the summer of the shark because the very same number of shark encounters occur
every single year,
but people are just more likely to find out about them or report them or move them up where they are in the news.
I'd never heard about dead dogs on a plane. Apparently it's run like this before. Have you?
Well, it's been a thing for a while, I guess, because that's how at first it's like, well, a dog is in the overhead bin, dog's dead. Grandma's in the overhead bin, grandma's dead. Then they say, oh, well. And then they say, well, you know, the dirty little secret is thousands of dogs die every year in transit. Then the one dog was sent to China or whatever it was.
Yes.
It was supposed to go to Cleveland.
Yes.
And it ends up. And it just,
I don't know where he's better off.
Right here, don't send me back to Cleveland. I'm thinking, it's got to be a reporting issue where it becomes a sorry, wag the dog kind of situation.
If you need the service animal, I understand.
That's different.
A couple of flights. If you need the service animal, you bring them on the flight. But I can't, having not been in that situation, I don't know anybody with, I guess it's what, anxiety or something like that? Maybe if you've got diabetes or something like
that. But some of these are just pets in the belly of the plane.
A lot of them.
Some of these are not service animals. Like you put them in the crate and you put them on the plane and you open the crate and the dog is dead.
Especially the one where it was United, right? That had the passenger put the dog in the overhead.
Well,
I don't know.
They were instructed to put the dog in the overhead.
If you're that close to the dog, right, that you've got to bring him on the plane, that you don't have a solution to the issue, mm-hmm. I don't know how you stand by and go, yeah, that's fine. Fido can go in the overhead.
That's all right. No
hold
big deal.
On that. Yeah. Yes, this priceless possession that I've brought with me on a very, very inconvenient journey.
Like
to
dig
Cleveland.
In a little bit? Like dig in?
Stand up.
Yeah.
Rent a car. Do something. I mean, if you're that committed.
Or just say no. I will not put this animal that's that important
happening.
To me in the
you
overhead.
You can take it from my cold, dead hand.
Especially because it was a 200-pound Mastiff. And so the
overhead luggage.
It's the middle-aged flight attendant just slamming on the thing, you know, because you know the one with doesn't quite close, and the edge of the wheelie thing is sticking out.
You know how passengers
and they're just pounding on it.
Passengers underneath that compartment always look the same. They've got that weird mix of very anxious and nervous. And will this please just end
mm-hmm,
already?
Right.
Just get the dog shoved into the.
How is it not making noise up there either? It's a living thing.
Most well-behaved dog in the world. No, you just shut the light on him and he goes to sleep immediately.
And my thought was that this is just the start of it because next the screaming baby's going up there.
Oh, Lord.
The next they're going to walk over and say, your kid's too loud, your kid's too ugly, your kid's too stupid, put him up in the thing.
I think we're just conditioned. Every time I get on a flight, I assume that there is a crying, kicking, screaming baby in the middle seat behind me that will not give me a chance to sleep.
You haven't given your child enough Benadryl or enough Candy Crush on the tablet, so child's going.
For us, it was scotch. On the way to the plane. That's
into the overhead bin with your kid. Hey, whatever, what's his name? Is it Owen? Is it Gavin? Whatever.
Tyler, Taylor. That's what it is.
Connor.
T. No, Connors are the worst. At least use two N's and two O's.
Well, what do you mean? Instead of like...
C-O-N-O-R is always weird for
did
me
you
to
see.
See
the, did you see the Deadspin article about the hockey guys?
C-O-N-R is awful. No, I have not.
Oh, it's... At some point, I will find it. It is... for if you are a youth sports parent, you will laugh your ass off at this. It is... It's
Connor,
it's making fun of the next generation of, like, the high-level hockey players. Like, the junior... I think it's, like, 14, 15, 16-year-olds. The names... If you spend any time currently around youth sports... And you start to see some of these names of some of these kids that are going to be your next generation of hockey superstars. There's a certain connection there that you're absolutely going to love. You're gonna just adore it.
And they're all born in January or February and named
based on the
Tyler.
That's on the Malcolm Gladwell
Outliers. Right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So Eamon Brennan of The Athletic, college basketball writer at the Fieldhouse, is going to join us in a few minutes. We're going to get his take on what has been, if not a tournament full of upsets, there's been some pretty interesting basketball. I know you had some thoughts on one of the great players in college basketball this year whose career might be over.
Yes. Might be completely done.
All right, we'll get to that after an update on the score. The Bernstein and McKnight Show, weekdays on the score, 9-1. So was that it for Trae Young?
I don't think that's it. You think that's it?
Well, he's coming out, right?
I would imagine. Oh, his college
yeah,
career?
That's
yes,
it. Yeah.
I would imagine it has to be. I just, you know, in the last, what, 10, 12 games that he played, the entire conference started to change how you guard him, and he completely is probably a little bit too far, but the game fell off in a really big way. And I just we're in this era now of NBA ball where, you know, you've got Steph Curry, you've got, you know, the three-pointer is so much more important now. And, you know, I don't have to tell you where the game's gone. I know you know. But I don't know if I see him fitting into that mold. I think he's a little bit of a different situation. I think he's a little bit of a different player. And I wonder what kind of a he feels more to me like a Phoenix Suns 7 seconds or less type guy.
Yeah.
And I don't know that that plays in today's game either.
Okay, here's what's going to happen. Because Steph Curry became Steph Curry, and none of us saw Steph Curry coming, we saw, oh, look at the little shooty college guy, and look, he's got great range, and what a story. And God,
could he dribble is a question.
Could he? Yeah, is he athletic enough? Did he have any muscle definition? Could he elevate?
Well, he wore the double XL at Davidson. That was a big...
And it took him a while to be great, and now he's got some ankle problems, and maybe we're never going to see peak Steph Curry quite the same way again. It's, you know, we don't know, but nobody saw that coming, whatever it was. However... because of the shots that he takes and because of the style of offense that has become popular in the NBA and elsewhere, there are going to be failed attempts at replicating Steph Curry. Maybe Trae Young is just one. When we immediately jump to, oh, well, this is what guys are now, it happens in every sport where you get somebody who's transcendent and then somebody says, well, this guy plays the game the same way. Yeah, but he's nowhere near as good.
The difference I saw, and granted, you know, Curry's run with Davidson in the tournament was a very different situation than Trae Young's, but there were possessions late in that game where Young was bringing the ball up and handing things off at the top of the key, giving up possession, where when they were running and they were going to absolutely be a lock tournament team in the first half of the college season and then had fallen off, and now Oklahoma State had a better case perhaps for the tournament than Oklahoma did, he wasn't giving those possessions away. He wasn't handing the ball off and playing off and trying to let his teammates create situations. I don't know if it was because of the last 10, 12 games. I don't know if his psyche or confidence had been shot some, but that was not at all the same Trae Young that we saw in when Oklahoma was going well.
I will tell you that Rob Gray on Houston,
awesome.
You watch him?
That was awesome.
That was pretty special. The problem I have with Trae Young, I'm sorry. I'm not. No, I'm not.
No, you're not. Anyone who leads a sentence with, I'm sorry, before your
so...
foot...
He's so weird looking.
It's a strange look. Yep.
It's like...
Well, there's some guys who...
It's like Matt Barnes exposed to gamma rays or something. It's like an irradiated Matt Barnes.
It's There are some guys.
He looks radiation poisoned.
It's got like a, yeah, there's certainly a different, the facial hair with the hair doesn't like, really quite.
But like thinning hair.
A little bit, yeah. There's some guys who, you know, you've played with guys who, you know, when they start to sweat a little bit, the hair absolutely falls apart. And maybe that comb over that they've got going to hide the bald spot in the back just absolutely wrecks itself. The headband that's got the receding hairline kind of just gives away.
The LeBron.
Yeah, something like that.
He had to get rid of it. Mm-hmm. But it's just, there's something about Trae Young that looks kind of like, I don't know what's going on there. This segment sponsored by Cece's New Crust, New Sauce, New York Style Pizza. Now at Cece's, grab an extra large slice of their new meatball pepperoni pizza, new cheesecake brownies. For dessert, there's just so much to love in the buffet for just five and change. Only at Cece's, prices vary. Restrictions apply. Eamon Brennan of the Fieldhouse, The Athletic, talking hoops next on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
First free throws today. Missed it. Here they come. One timeout. They don't take it.
And it was a great feeling. You know, I thank Marcus, you know, for making that pass. You know, any one of us could have hit that shot. But, you know, I was just fortunate enough to be in the position. And, you know, when I seen the shot and I had space, I was confident in it went in, luckily.
Dante Ingram as cool as can be after draining a game winner that Loyola fans will never forget. Joining us now to talk about that and more in the NCAA tournament here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show is Eamon Brennan, who is on Twitter, at Eamon Brennan, college basketball writer for the Fieldhouse and the Athletic, and he is with us on The Score. You know, Eamon, it's funny how many people, and I don't know if it's a Chicago thing, and maybe you can give us the national perspective on this, a lot of people in Chicago had said, I legitimately think Loyola's going to win this game, I think this is a great matchup for them, so it didn't feel as upsetty, I guess, maybe to some people around here.
No, I think that was the case nationally, maybe not to the same extent because there isn't much, you know, obviously as much of a focus. And having lived in Chicago for 6 years, I'm well aware that there's a sort of low-level hunger for something basketball, collegiate basketball related to be worth at least paying attention to. So I can understand why people maybe get a little bit more excited than from a national level. But, I mean, I write the Bubble Watch for The Athletic, and had Loyola Chicago sort of on my radar all year. And, you know, they were like a nice, when I sort of first started taking a look at them, they were like a nice team. They had to win at Florida. They were the best team in the Valley, clearly, but it wasn't obvious that if they didn't win the Valley tournament that they'd get in. And then by the end of the year, by the time they were done with that tournament or nearly done with it, you sort of sit up and look at their numbers and what they're doing on a per-possession basis and sort of how they get their offense. And you're like, you know, this team is good. Like, this might be the best mid-major, quote-unquote mid-major team in the tournament. And I think that's kind of where we're at. And so, yeah, with a matchup with a team like Miami, where there isn't a huge size discrepancy, and, you know, Miami had some injuries and didn't play its best basketball down the stretch, to me, it didn't feel like a huge surprise. I think you could make an argument that Loyola was, you know, sort of a 50-50 split with Miami in terms of sort of statistical likelihood to win the game, and you throw some extra factors in, I wasn't hugely surprised, but it was still obviously a really exciting way for the not totally surprising thing to happen.
I was really impressed by the way Loyola was able to bounce back from a first half where shots weren't necessarily going down for them, shots that they'd probably seen gone down earlier in the season. What's the word with Arizona, Eamon? How does that story move next? Because DeAndre Ayton is going to come out and go to the draft. That program is, I think, probably going to still deal with some of the federal investigations going on. And even though the athletic director and Sean Miller have stood up and said, no, we didn't do anything wrong in this very specific case, that's a big-time program that may face a lot more than just a first-round exit.
Right. I mean, I think even if you set aside all of the FBI stuff, and not necessarily that we should, but just for the sake of mental organization, set aside all of the FBI investigations, all of the NCAA, potential NCAA violation investigations, all that stuff, and just look at Arizona's roster right now, they're probably going to lose five guys. I think Raleigh Alkins is going to go to the draft as well. Alonzo Trier is going to declare. Obviously, Ayton is gone, and their seniors are going to be gone. So even if they weren't under this scrutiny and there weren't these questions that had to be answered at a university level, not just a program level, the team, just from a roster and rotation standpoint next year, looks pretty vacant. And there isn't a clear group of replacements in the way that Sean Miller has always brought in because of those questions about FBI investigations and whether they'll be playing in the tournament in the future, that there isn't that same recruiting success, at least as of right now, that we've seen from his program year in and year out, when he's had to replace guys like Ayton and Trier. So beyond all of these sort of big picture things that Arizona has to figure out from not only an NCAA sort of perspective, but a legal perspective, there's also just the fact that they go out, you know, with this first round loss, played absolutely dreadfully, and now have to sort of turn. Like, if you're an Arizona fan, you're not saying to yourself the way you might have in past years, oh, well, at least we got X, Y, and Z coming in next year, we'll still be good. Like, I don't know where they go on the court from here, let alone off of it.
It is time for your chance to win $1,000 in cash on The Score. This hour's keyword is permit. Text permit to 72881 by the end of the hour. Again, the keyword is permit to 72881. One randomly selected nationwide entrant from this hour will win. Please do not text and drive. Message and data rates may apply. I was watching with interest what was going on with Kansas and Penn, because Kansas, we know, has a history of some ignominious ousters. And while at no point did I really think it was going to happen, it certainly recalled some ghosts of Kansas past at that point. Is there anything that happened in that game give you pause about them going forward?
I wouldn't say that anything that happened in that game necessarily. I think Penn was pretty good, and people talked about it a lot leading into that game. I think Kansas's players, I think Bill Self talked about it, like, this is not a traditional 16 seed in the same way that, like, Radford was and Villanova just dominated them last night. But I think my concerns with Kansas don't have to do with Penn, but have to do sort of in a similar way to the concerns I had about Arizona going into the tournament, which were that I don't know that they guard really well, particularly relative to the way Kansas teams traditionally guard and their best teams have guarded. But even the sort of the so-so Kansas teams we remember that still won conference titles, but maybe didn't go as far in the NCAA tournament, this might be the worst defense of all of them. And they're good on the offensive end. They make shots. Devontae Graham is obviously an incredible player. They get out and run. They get easy buckets. And Udoka Azubuike has been really important to them. But there is a sort of lingering concern that I have that all it will take is a team that gets really hot. And it could honestly be Seton Hall, who can really put points on the board, is experienced, and has big guys that can really match up on the front line. All it will take is a few shots to get going, some offensive rebounds. Kansas will find itself in a hole and will be playing from behind in the second half, and that's not a place that anyone seed wants to be, because, as you mentioned, sort of those ghosts of losses past start creeping back up, and people say they don't care and they're one game at a time and all that stuff. But if you play for Kansas, you're obviously aware of the fact that they've gone out. People obviously give you a hard time about it. And I think you get late in the game that you're supposed to win and you're not winning, things start to get really, really nervous and really tight.
Talk with Eamon Brennan of The Athletic and The Fieldhouse here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. We're live in real time in Elk Grove Village. Two other Blue Blood programs really worried me with their performances. Kentucky played a game against Davidson in which they did not hit a three-pointer for the first time since 1988. And they also struggled from the charity stripe, too. They were terrible down the stretch trying to put away Davidson. Michigan played Montana. And while the Grizzlies had a decent night, Michigan was awful and just couldn't get things going and just kind of won ugly. Eamon, do you kind of feel that Kentucky and Michigan ran into bad matchups and will right the ship, or is this indicative of teams that might be a little overslotted?
I would say, honestly, Kentucky, it was weird. They didn't play super well, but I was ultimately kind of impressed with them. Like, I saw Davidson at the A-10 tournament, and thought coming away from that when their offense was great the whole tournament and then was bad against Rhode Island and they still somehow found a way to win. Like, hey, if Davidson guards a little bit and, you know, against whoever they play in the first round of the tournament, they could be a real problem because they're just almost impossible to guard the way they run that sort of motion offense. And Kentucky, I thought, actually did a pretty decent job on the defensive end. And, yeah, it just didn't make three. But it got twos very reliably, which in 2018 is not something that we consider to be a recipe for success at any level of basketball. But I think it is what Kentucky needed to do, because if they got into an up-and-down Reggie Wallace sort of three-point line contest with Davidson, it was never going to work out well. So I was actually kind of impressed with the way they won the game, even though there were a lot of things that were ugly about it and the statistics look weird and aberrant coming away. I was actually pretty kind of like weirdly impressed with how they won the game. Michigan, I think, honestly, I'm always hesitant to make too much of this, but I think they said it, and my colleague Brendan Quinn at The Athletic had a great piece sort of behind the scenes with Michigan. They just had a really weird sort of 14-day layoff after the Big Ten tournament, had a game that was late in the day. Everything about it was kind of strange in their schedule, and their coach, John Beilein, is a man who, as Brendan puts it, has his fair share of neuroses about scheduling and being very exact in what they're doing every day and very routine. And it's been all the opposite of that routine. And I think it was probably always going to be the case that Michigan was going to have sort of a weird, out of rhythm start to the NCAA tournament. I think if that's still the case on Saturday night, then yeah, we can start having some concerns. But I think if you took Michigan deep in your bracket and they come out and play really well and look good on Saturday, you could probably feel good about Thursday's game as just being kind of a weird one-off sort of schedule-related sort of outlier, I guess.
What's more likely and why, Buffalo beating Kentucky or Loyola beating Tennessee?
Oof, I would say Buffalo beating Kentucky, I would say Loyola beating Tennessee. I think that Buffalo is in a similar spot to Davidson in that Buffalo needs to make a lot of shots. It doesn't match up particularly well because size-wise, Kentucky is not overwhelming, but the spots that they are, they really are, and the guys that they have that are big can stretch the floor with you in a way that a lot of other teams that have size can't. I think that Loyola matches up with Tennessee in a way that is sort of like a straight up, if Loyola was playing in the SEC and you saw them give Tennessee a tough home game and win by a bucket or lose by a bucket, nothing about it would look particularly odd to you. Whereas if you look statistically at where Buffalo's at and what Kentucky does and their personnel, to me, that just both empirically and sort of emotionally would feel like a much bigger upset and a much more unlikely occurrence to happen. Whereas I honestly feel like Loyola Chicago is just a good team. They're not great. They're not, they're not a one seed that got vastly underseeded or something, but I think they're a very solid team that if they were, if they had been playing in a league like the SEC or the Big East or something like that, wouldn't be seated where they are, and we sort of consider to be, if not Tennessee's equal, because that Tennessee team is really good and had a great year, then certainly well within the sort of accepted window for a team that could absolutely beat Tennessee on a neutral floor. To me, that just wouldn't feel like that much of an upset.
Eamon, really good information, and we appreciate you taking the time. When the game's about to start, we'll let you go, let you get to work. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Yep, have a good one.
Eamon Brennan, the college basketball writer for The Athletic and The Fieldhouse on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. We're at Real Time Sports in Elk Grove Village. Some of these coveted tables are being snapped up. There's a whole group of people either leaving work or pretending to do work as they start cracking some beers. We got cowboy guy over there who is excited for college basketball. Oh, he just stared me a look.
Recognize you?
I think I'm going to get ridden out of town on a rail. This town ain't,
you need
big,
that every once
town
in a while.
Ain't big enough for the both of us. That guy's going to kick my ass before all is said and done. I don't like what's going to happen to me here.
Good luck with that.
And some Bears after the top. I want to get to some of what Ryan Pace said yesterday, and I guess how I interpreted what he was saying. That's a real positive sign for the Chicago Bears. Listen to me. Listen to my Bears optimism.
Hub got you going yesterday.
Well, it was weird. It was weird. I trust that Hub is going to act as a governor for some of my instincts. Maybe Hub could actually act as governor.
Which hurt.
Should we write him? Really hurt. Couldn't do any worse. Should we write him in?
Absolutely. Hub for Gov.
Did I just run Hub for governor?
You could be his campaign manager, too.
No, listen, this state, I know we're broke, but... I kind of like it. Governor Hub. All you need is Hub. I can print up all, you know, these various bumper stickers that we've come up with before. So some bear stuff. After the top of the hour, Bernstein and McKnight, middays, 9-1 on the score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.